Hey, how's it going, everybody? It's Nicholas Davenport, aka Mr. Mental Muscle. And we're back again with the Mental Muscle Podcast. Now, today I want to talk about personality. Now, you probably heard this term before. You might have said, I want to meet someone who has a nice personality, things of that nature. But what does it truly mean? Now, you probably heard the term like type A personality or type B. I would say that's probably the most commonly used expression when we talk about personality traits. But what does that truly mean? Now, if you've heard of it, you might know that type A is more aggressive. They're go-getters. They're always trying to find their next move. They might be a little anxious. They're always antsy, wanting to go, go, go. While type B is more laid back, go with the flow. What happens, happen. They're not too assertive, not too over the top. They may get things done, maybe not. But these terms actually derive out of the field of psychology altogether. Now, there's actually two cardiologists, Meyer Friedman and Ray Rosenman, who basically noticed that in their office, they would see that the upholstery on the chairs, on the edge of the seat, and then the armrest would get worn down. And as the person would keep coming back, they're like, hey, what's going on here? So they had a theory that you're in a cardiologist's office, so more than likely, you're there to see if your heart's working okay. And that's not always the best place to be. And it's usually men over the age of 40 to maybe 60. And this is the prime of your life where a heart attack or something of that nature could take place. So they saw that this high worry or even anxious people were wearing down these chairs. So that was the assumption. Now they would go on to do other studies that would kind of correlate the higher type A personality traits with people that were anxious, maybe aggressive, always trying to work rather than settling and just focus on the here and now. They wanted to go, go, go. So this kind of set the tone. But when it comes to personality, there's so much more that goes into it other than just, are you this or are you that? And the first question you might say, what is personality exactly? Now, if you want a simple definition, it's a set of characteristics, traits, qualities that are applied to an individual that makes them set apart from everyone else. Now, as humans, we mostly have similar traits. You know, as a whole, we have the same drive and motivation for success, whatever that may be, whether it's finishing school, starting a family. That's more so modern times, but if you go back far enough, survival was our main goal for success, but these personality traits led us to get to there. But that might have adapted over the time, but the end all be all is this is what describes you from being you and the behaviors that you do to get to said end goals. Now, another question people ask me a lot is, can personality change? And I would say not really, but kind of. Most researchers will say that personality is constant throughout adulthood. So up until the point after adolescence, you're probably who you're going to be. But you might argue, can you change the behaviors that go along with said personality traits? So in a sense, you can change, but there always will kind of be a default mode that you're going to act upon. Given any given situation, where will you fall back to? An example that I've learned from one of my mentors is, think about having a dominant hand, right? If I was to quickly toss you a ball real quick without you being ready for it, you probably put up your dominant hand, maybe your right hand, since majority of humans are right-handed, to deflect it or even catch it. Now, does it mean that you can't use your left hand to do what you need to do or catch it, deflect it? No, you still can use your left hand. You might have even tried to do that if I was to do that. But you're probably not going to do it if I threw it 20 different times like that on a random spread apart. You're probably going to use the most dominant hand. And we can kind of liken personality to this. If I put you in any given situation, what is the default mode or your disposition that you're naturally going to fall into? Extroversion, introversion, open into experience, neuroticism, whatever it may be. And these terms you may not be familiar with, but we'll go more into detail about that. But going back to the different types, the traits, we're talking about these type of things. These have different meanings and applications. So if I look at like a type theory or maybe something like a state where we're going to be just this. Like I'll use extroversion. That's probably one of the most popular. So someone who's extroverted is usually attending to someone who's more outgoing or more sociable. Now, there are certain measures such as the Myers-Briggs personality test where you might be one or the other. But the problem with these things is that it's not always going to be given every single time, because think of it as a spectrum from 1 to 100, because personality can be measured and we have different psychometric tools that can do this, Myers-Briggs being one of them. Now, if it's 1 to 100 and after 50, so 51 to 100, you're considered extroverted. But for 50 and under, you're considered introverted. If I was to take the test and get a 52, I'm now extroverted. But if I took it again 3 years later and I got a 47, now I'm introverted. Now you can see the issue with this, because Just given those few point differences, it changed my whole disposition based off this test. And that can be a little unreliable. Now, this is just a general example, but you can get an idea of this is how it can not be the best accuracy of predicting your personality. Now, on the other hand, if you look at a trait, we take that same scale, 1 to 100, 100 being extroverted again, and 1 being introverted. If you fall further to one side, and you took it and say you're a 69, and you fall again to the other side, if you take it again, and you're a 48, it's not saying that you're not one or the other. It just means you lean more so to another side, but you still possess a spectrum of traits after that. So if I'm a 49, there's still 51 other points where there's a chance for me to be extroverted. So this is what we're getting into when we talk about personality. Now, going back to how to measure it. So there's many we could go over, but I'm going to talk about the big five personality model or the five factor model. Now, there's been numerous researchers that went into developing this, but this is probably the most utilized measure, and it's even sprung out other measures upon it. But we'll talk about the different five factors. You already heard me talk about extroversion, but let's go into the others. So there's two acronyms that they usually use to go about this, OCEAN or CANOE. And it's funny that they both deal with water, right? So OCEAN, that's the one I like to use. O is for openness to experience. C is for conscientiousness. E is for extroversion. A is for agreeableness. And N is for neuroticism. Now, each one, like I said, it's a spectrum. Where do you fall most to one side? Even though you can still have traits of one or the other. So it's not an end-all, be-all, absolute. Now, open to experience. This is more so people who are open to new ideas. People have more unconventional thought, creativity, things of that nature. You'll see someone like an artist or some type of academia or philosopher because they're going to take in ideas that are not necessarily the norm, or if they are the norm, they're going to counter it and say, hey, what if we went a different direction? You can see it's associated with a lot of different career paths, and we're going to talk more about how this can help you into your everyday life. Now, C, conscientiousness. So these are people who are more goal-oriented, detail-oriented. They're going to follow through. They can even come off as perfectionists sometimes because they want to get the job done. They want to do it in a systematic manner. They want to make sure it's done right and on time. Now, a person on the opposite end of this would be more so go with the flow. They might just do it to get it done, but they're not going to care as much about how it's done, long as it gets finished. They may not be a perfectionist, so it can be a little less than good, but they want to turn it in or get it done just because. E, extroversion. So once again, this is probably the most talked about, the most popular, but I think there's a little misconception too. It's not just that you're sociable or outgoing, it's how comfortable you are in social or outgoing situations. Because like I said, anyone can be either side of these spectrums, but it's just a matter of what is your default mode. So someone who's higher on extroversion, they're more enamored with being around people, starting conversations, being social, the life of the party, but this is where they live. This is where they want to be. They feel energized. Now, someone on the opposite end of the spectrum, introversion, it doesn't mean they can't be sociable. Everyone has to talk and relate to people, but they're going to find more of their energy and comfort zone being to themselves, thinking about ideas. Now, does that mean that extroverted people aren't smart or can't think about ideas? No, that's not what it means at all. There's plenty of people we consider genius that are extroverted, and there's plenty of people that we may not say they're smart that are introverted. It's just a matter of where do you want to live the most, where are you going to feel the most energized. If I use myself anecdotally, I'm very introverted. I get my most comfort when I'm to myself, just thinking in my thoughts. I can have a great day just reflecting on what I want to go inside my head. But most of my work and my business, like Mind, Body, One, and the other endeavors I do, I have to be social. I have to teach people if I'm in a professor role. I have to train people who are my athletes or law enforcement teams. I have to do videos like this where I have to talk on camera. And a lot of people see me there, so they assume I'm extroverted. But I'm comfortable there for many reasons. One, because I've done it so much and I've gotten used to it. And we'll talk more about that type of stuff. But I also like talking about this. So you might see me more sociable in things that I know about or like talking about. Therefore, I can be extroverted when it needs to be. But if it was to catch me on any given day in a scenario where there's a lot of people around, I'm probably not the one in the middle of everyone talking and going out to everyone to get a conversation. That's just not me. So think about it like that. Not just am I outgoing or not outgoing, but where do I feel the most energized after doing it? If I do a presentation, I can kill it, but I'm going to feel drained afterwards. I'm not going to look for more things to talk about and do with people. Now, agreeableness. Agreeableness is more so cooperative, not necessarily combative. You don't, doesn't mean you don't go against the grain. It just means that you're less likely to be the one to spark it up. You might not agree with everyone, but you're not going to be the one to say, hey, wait a minute, what if we did this? And that's not a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It just matters on the scenario. And that's what all these traits got to think about. What is the scenario? Where do they fit? And how does it make the most sense? Person who is more agreeable, probably not going to be the leader per se, but you can still be a leader and have agreeable traits, because a good leader is open to other people's ideas, other people's thoughts, but they're not necessarily going to be like, everyone should be included, because there is going to be a hierarchy if you're talking about leadership. Now, the last one in neuroticism. So this is associated with people who are less adaptable, stressed, they're higher to worry, they're more fearful. They're going to get into the mindset of, what if this can go wrong? It probably will. This is a person, if you have them on your team or in your life, that they may be the naysayers in your corner, not necessarily because they don't like you, don't want you to succeed, but they're going to point out everything that could go wrong, right? It's like Murphy's Law. Anything that could go wrong will go wrong. And this is neuroticism. So they're high worry, high anxiety. They're more likely to deal with depression. They're likely to deal with anxiety disorders. But this is something that we all deal with to some degree. So once again, it's not about, am I this or am I that? It's more so, where do I spend the most time? Where am I more likely to be in any given situation? And given the fields that you're in, you might be a little different and more comfortable dependent on what you're doing. So that's why we always got to look at personality on a spectrum or a continuum, and not just the end all be all. Now, when it comes to different places where these different traits can be effective, let's look at workplace, athletics, school, or romance. So starting with the workplace, think about what we just went over. So if I'm at the workplace and I'm, say, a mid-level management, I'm not the boss, but I'm not at the bottom of the totem pole, what traits will you think I need to have? Definitely need conscientiousness, because think about it. The people under you have goals and deadlines, but they all answer to you. So you go to the bigger picture in your department. So therefore, you have to be very detail oriented of every worker beneath you. You have to make sure that if this date is due, did that person do what their assigned task is? And if you're a perfectionist, a lot of people lean to more this side, you got to make sure it's done correctly, because more than likely, if it isn't, it's going to fall back on you. But also you can see agreeableness no matter what role you are, because you have to work with different people. Even if you may not see eye to eye, you have to be mindful of the group, the team. This has to have that cohesion. But this kind of leans over to that open to experience too, because hearing new ideas from people that may be beneath you, you definitely have to know that, okay, I can't shun them completely because they're working for you. If you're an entrepreneur, this goes even more so, because you essentially have anyone that's on your team, if they're not full-time or the contract, they have to really fall in line with your program, but you have to be open to what they're bringing to the table too. Now, the people at the top of the food chain, the bosses, the CEOs, the high-level management, they don't have to have as much agreeableness, because usually it's my way or the highway, what I say goes, but you can't disregard it completely. So once again, you always have a certain level, because imagine if one of your employees came to you as a boss or entrepreneur and they say to you, hey, I had an idea to make this type of work flow better because the procedure or the SOP, the standard operations and procedures aren't as efficient, and you made them at one point, but now it's your higher level and they're doing it every single day, and they might see something that may be more efficient to do. Should you just automatically say, hey, this is how it worked for me to get me to this point? And some people think like that, and it's not saying it's wrong, but will it be the best for them to feel at peace with what they're doing? Because remember, if they're not happy and they quit, that's money you have to spend to get them back in the, get a new person back in the door, I should say. So got to be mindful of that. Now, extroversion, you can look at that in the workplace. This definitely could play a factor, because it doesn't mean you have to be the first person to say good morning, hi to everyone, but to an extent or degree, you're going to have to interact with other people. So if you're always standoffish and introverted to yourself, I don't care how great your ideas, how great your mindset is, it's not going to give as much benefit if no one wants to be around you. So you have to learn certain sets of skills when it needs to be, so you'll be able to be extroverted in the scenario so you can do your job. So in the workplace, so many different variables can go into that. So make sure you think about that, how these traits may play a factor to you. Now, if we go over to sport, there's a lot of similarities to a team and a workplace team. But in sport, the common goal may be a little more defined if you're on a team sport. But if it's an individual sport, this may change what you may need. So let's start with a team sport. So once again, you're going to have some agreeableness there, because depending on the sport, if it's like a dynamic sport like soccer, basketball, like that, it's going to be a lot of agreeableness because in the real-time moment, you're playing with each other as the play develops, as you try to score, try to defend. There's a lot of communication going on. It's a lot of cooperation. You have to be on the same page with your teammate. If they're trying to pass the ball here, you need to be there. So you can see all that cooperation. Now, you can see if there's not a lot of that agreeableness, a lot of headbutting, who wants to play with someone that they don't like or they can't stand? Even if they're a great player, there's been a lot of professional athletes who are amazing players, but they said they were horrible to work with. So why would you want to be that, right? Even in, like, say, the movies, this is a little bit off topic, but you ever heard of the movie star who's an amazing actor, award-winning Academy, Oscar-winning actor, but nobody likes working with them? Every director, every cast member has something negative or bad to say. This is what we're talking about. So you want to make sure that on a sports team, it's the same thing. Don't be a diva. But at the same time, there's a level of disagreeableness where you have to take charge, because sometimes winning and losing is meant about the people who are going to go outside the box. So that definitely plays a factor too. So you got to blur that line a little bit, but the end all be all is you got to be on the same page as your team. Now, extroversion. This is very important because most settings in sport, team or individual, you're going to be in front of a crowd. You're going to have other people, even if it's not a large crowd, you're going to have other people either taunting you, cheering you, wanting you to win, wanting you to lose, but the eyes, the lights, the cameras are all on you. And if you're not good in social situations, doesn't mean you can't be a good athlete. That's not what I'm saying. It just means, where do I feel most comfortable? There's some people who are introverted in day-to-day scenarios, but they come alive. You can look at someone like maybe Mike Tyson. He might seem a little to himself, shy, timid. He's definitely not that. People know he was all over the place in his younger days, but in that ring, when he boxed, he came alive. But this is just like with someone. We talk about this in psychology with identity, like performance identity or athletic identity for specifically sport, is who are you when it's time to perform? If you're a high athletic identity, that means you're tied in sync with who you are on that field, on that court, on that track. But it doesn't need to be too high when if things go wrong and you lose, you attribute your personality and self-worth as a person. So if I lost a game, I lost a race, am I a bad person? You have these negative thoughts and feelings? No, they're two different people, but you need a certain level of it. So when you come to like extroversion, that's going to be needed because you need to be able to adjust in social situations. You need to execute and perform when it matters most. So extroversion is definitely a big factor. And even research, me and my colleagues did a study where we published on extroversion or different personality traits, for example, that correlated with mental toughness. And we saw that confidence and extroversion were positively correlated because someone who's confident, they have to call upon themselves to do the task at a moment's notice. And an extroverted person typically can do that. So once again, if you're not an extroverted person, you got to find yourself being able to step up and get into the lights, even when you may not want to. You can practice this. This is a whole other topic we can maybe do a video on, but practicing in the moments of the pressure or when you need to call it up at a moment's notice will help you get there quicker and acclimate, because it's not about how good you can do outright, but it's how well you can adjust when it matters. And that may not always be in sync when you want it to be. So extroversion, obviously, I've beaten a dead horse, but that's definitely something you need. Now, conscientiousness. This one, every athlete needs, because you have to be disciplined. You have to be goal-oriented, because if you're not, you're probably not going to stay to it. You're not going to win the game. You're not going to get stronger, faster. Whatever that sport requires, you need to be in line with that, because if you don't, who wants to show up the day of the race, the day of the meet, the day of the game, and then say, now I'm going to stick to it? No, it takes months, even years leading up to just that one moment before you can reap the benefits. Most people look at the grace and say, hey, they work so hard, but how many really truly think about the real effort it takes? You can use someone like Usain Bolt. This is one of the biggest analogies I use when doing my mental coaching practices, because if you add up every race he did from his junior leagues when he was a teenager all the way to the Olympics and until he retired, it probably comes up to about 25 minutes of actual running. Think about that. All the hundreds are under 10 seconds for the most part, especially after he became a pro. All the 400s and 200s he ran were either 45, 46 seconds or 21 and under for the 200 meter. And the relays for his spot, probably 8 to 9 seconds. Even if you want to include the whole thing, you're talking about 38, 37 seconds. So you add up every one of those, it's coming less than 30 minutes total, no matter how you spin it. So think about that. 30 minutes of actual performance, but about 20 years of work. Is that some type of consistency you would want to do? Think about that. A lot of people would say no. A lot of people want instant gratification. They want to have it here, right now. And that's not how it goes in sports. So if you're an athlete watching this, Be ready to have that diligence, that steadfast, that constancy, meaning even when I'm not winning, even when I don't like it, even when it doesn't feel good, even when it's boring, I can still go. Usain Bolt, pro NFL players, basketball, whatever sport you choose, they all have that in common. So personality traits plays a big factor, especially when you say you're a coach trying to find athletes on your team. You're not always going to go for just the most athletic, because there's been plenty of people through history. Probably if you play sport, you've seen them yourself, that are the most talented, but they never pan out because they couldn't get it right here. And your personality, so much people don't understand how much these traits are important, because you got to be the one who want to go when it doesn't feel good and when there's least expected. You usually get the most return on investment when you're not trying to get it. So that's something most people can't live with in general, let alone athletes. So that conscientiousness, being goal-oriented, attention to detail, doing what matters, and keep following through is definitely needed. And I'll say the last one with neuroticism, you got to look at it like the people who are high worriers still can perform. Some people, that threshold, something in sport and performance psychology we call the inverted U theory, is one side of the threshold is very low arousal and the other side is very high arousal. This just means how awake and alive do we get for the task at hand. And the most optimal, they say, is right in the middle of that U, the top of the U. Now, some people fall a little higher, some people fall a little lower, but the name of the game is, where do I need to be? So that neuroticism or that anxiety may not always deter you from a top performance. I'm not going to say it will, but I want to see the person who can get in that optimal zone and still focus and do it without having to get overhyped or too wired, because now you're leaving it a chance. A person who has to have that negativity, has to worry, has to stress to get in that zone, is leaving it too much to chance. And in performance in any field, but especially sports, we never want to leave that opportunity to chance. We want to be in charge as much as possible, because not everything will be in our control, but as much as possible to what we can do when we need it. So we have to be able to have a lower level of neuroticism. It's going to sneak in. You're going to have worries. What if I can't win? What if I don't play my best? It's okay. But that shouldn't be the determining factor, and it shouldn't be the driving force. That should not be the fuel. Think about putting water in your gas tank. Yeah, it's filling it up with some type of liquid, but you're not only going to mess up your car and maybe damage it and hurt yourself because the car doesn't run right, but you're not going to go anywhere. And that's the same thing. So we're going to make sure that neuroticism, that high worry, we keep it at bay as best as possible. Now, outside of workplace, outside of athletics, we can look at academics and school. A lot of the two things we just mentioned before go hand in hand as well. So we can see how clearly these can be important for a person trying to get a degree, or even just grade school all the way to high school and even beyond that. So when you want to learn, think about this, pretty straightforward, conscientiousness. You got to have goals, because if I want to graduate on time, what classes am I taking? Am I setting out my time to study? Am I finishing my homework on time? Am I doing it right? So that little bit of perfectionism, I use the term perfectionism not to be like, if it isn't this, I don't want it. But it has to be a certain attention to detail where you hold yourself to a higher standard, but in a healthy way. Because some people go too far on the perfectionism scale and want to be so high on it that if it isn't exactly how they see it or want it, they don't want it at all and they just throw it away. And I've seen people do this. In my years of teaching, from college undergrads down to middle school and high school, I've had students literally have an effort that was perfectly fine and not want to turn it in simply because they thought it wasn't perfect. It was an A work, but not A plus work. Think about that. An A is an A. Who cares if it's 0.35 points higher on your GPA? You still pass. And we get to the nitpick like that. Is that really helping us? Because once again, it's about how well do you adjust? And does that sound like an adjusted person who isn't able to see, hey, it's not the best it could be, but it's definitely well up there. Because now you're picking at straws and just going with the things that may not matter as much, that energy could be fixated somewhere else. Think about efficiency. Name of game, how do I utilize my energy? How to control my behaviors? And if you're not doing that with this, who knows if you're doing other things? And this is just school, right? I've had people literally stress themselves because they got a 90 A instead of a 98 A. Guess what it says on the report card no matter what? A. So all in all, does it really matter? So constancy, staying on focus, being goal-oriented, conscientiousness, definitely needed for academics. Now, you can look at openness to experience a little bit here, because a lot of different ideas, some that might be not conventional to what you know, depending on what your degree is. If you're in a field that you're not familiar with, you definitely have to be open-minded. Or if you're in grade school, you have to be open to the teacher that's teaching you, because some people have different teaching styles, people have different learning styles. And I've talked about this on other videos where Your learning style is going to play a factor, even though you utilize multiple. It's not just one, but won't go too deep into that. But also, education, a lot of times, I say education is not even about knowledge per se, but it's about trust, because that openness to experience. How much do you trust where the source is coming from? Because if I just tell you on this podcast, you don't know me, you're like, what's this guy Nicholas talking about? You don't trust me. You might like, I don't care about his information. Now, you can get the same information from your brother or your mom or someone near and dear to you that you respect and trust. And guess what? You believe them. Now, let's say their information was wrong or incorrect or whatever it may be. The fact that you trust them makes it more open for you to hear it. But someone who's higher open to experience, they're probably going to at least hear it out regardless of the source, because they want to question it themselves and they like the abstract. Not everything's so clear cut, black and white. Now, there is subjects that are more concrete, like math and most of the sciences. But coming from myself, who's been in the social science, or more specifically the behavioral science with psychology and cognitive science, it's a lot of things that may not be so clear cut, especially something like personality. So if you're open to experience and you're higher on that, you're probably going to like art, going to like philosophy. You may like to learn about world history, things that aren't everyday for you, because someone who's more rigid in that, they're going to stick to the clear cut thing, which once again, isn't bad. You need that side as well. You can't always look at everything so out of the box that nothing is solid information to you, because then you just question the question and become a contrarian. What do you truly get done or accomplished in a group of people or even yourself? So in school, you need to have that curiosity to at least be open to learn. Now, agreeableness and extroversion can kind of be considered in school, because from the social aspect, if you're socially awkward and it comes to making friends and classmates, you might want to be more adjusted to that. If you're extroverted, you're going to be easier to talk to. People might call you a social butterfly. You feel good when you're in a group setting, doing a group project. You know, some people have that project and one person does all the work, but the other person just sits back to themselves. Or they'll be like, everyone do their own part and we'll come together at the end. So that's more dependent on the type of classes you're taking, the major you're in, or just the group setting in general. So extroversion and agreeableness do play a role, because you have to have some cooperation, but it's not maybe to the biggest degree as you being conscientiousness and being on the right path and being goal-oriented, or being more open to experience to learn. Now, this last one we'll talk about, far as the different ways we can look at personality and performance through our day-to-day life, is romance. Think about it. We live to be 75 to 85 years old, depending on the country you're in, depending on a lot of factors. So you might spend a decent amount of that with another person. People get married, have long-term relationships. So the factor of how we behave and our personality is gonna definitely make a difference, because who wants to be around someone that doesn't mesh as well? Now, you ever heard someone say, like on dating apps or just dating in general, I want to find someone with a nice personality? What this really means is I want someone who's probably high on agreeableness. So we'll start there. Now, agreeableness, once again, if I haven't got it clear through you yet, someone who's highly open to the other person's ideas, cooperative, not as opposing, won't butt heads as much. People who score high on this tend to have longer lasting relationships. This makes sense, right? Because if I'm always negating my partner or loved one's ideas, what they want to do, who they are, they're probably going to start to resent me. Now, does it mean that you're a pushover? No, that's not what we're saying here. But studies have shown that people who score higher on this tend to do better relationships. So that being said, agreeableness definitely makes sense. Now, if we look at something like extroversion, I can see to a certain degree why this would be important, because a lot of romantic relationships involve outings, dates. When you're going on dates, you don't want to do the same thing every single time. So if you're not one to be in social situations, but your partner is, it doesn't mean you can't be compatible, but there has to be some flexibility, some agreeableness. You have to learn to cope on one side if you're more extroverted. And if you're more extroverted, you got to learn how to be more introverted and do more intimate things in a smaller setting. And both have to adjust, because if you're too extroverted, it puts you in a lot of social scenarios where it may not be the best place for a relationship. This is kind of linked with something we call novelty seeking. People who score high on this could have higher infidelity rates, because think about it. Novelty seeking means wanting new experiences. If you're always wanting the next thing, the newest thing, that can eventually go from events and outings to a person. And you can see how this could be a problem if you're trying to be in a long-term committed relationship or even marriage. And then you get into kids, you're going to have child-rearing abilities where you need to be on the same page. So a lot of this comes full circle. And when it comes to dating, I talk about dating and dopamine and how the mindset plays in how we choose our partners from a psychological aspect, cognitive, neuroscience, and even evolutionary aspect. There's a lot of things that go into that. But simply from the personality side, you want to make sure that not necessarily you have the same personalities, because there's even theories to say that depending if you're looking for a relationship or not, that's going to dictate what type of traits you're going to look for. But basically, do they make sense to what you're trying to achieve, the outcome? Because most of the times when we get into a relationship, we're looking more so for how we feel in that moment. And once again, personality is not just moment to moment. It's your best disposition or your default mode in any given scenario. So you need to understand who this person is and their behavior traits in different scenarios, right? You ever heard people say, I didn't know what type of person they were till after we got deeply involved. You don't want to be this. Imagine buying a car. You found out 3 months later, there's no spare tire in the trunk and you get a flat on the highway. And guess what? You have nothing to help you. It's the same thing. Find this thing out earlier. That way, you know what you're dealing with. See them in social settings. If you need a highly extroverted partner, you know where you need to be. You know where they need to be. If they're not going to budge, it's not saying just dump them, but you have to get on the same page. And if they say, you know what, this is too much for me, maybe then you part ways, because it's going to come to a point where that's going to play a factor. If you're always on the scene needing to be social, they never want to go. Eventually, it's going to bother you probably. It's not going to say you have to be that, because there's a lot of times where it's like, you know what, go have your fun with your friends. I'll be here at home. And maybe that could work for you. But a lot of times, more often than not, that's going to cause a clash and vice versa. So make sure that you see them in the different social settings. Make sure you see them when they have to cooperate with others to see if they have a lower high level of agreeableness. If they always need new experiences, see if they're able to adjust. Because this last one we'll talk about with dating romance is neuroticism. Are they always worriers? Stress levels, anxiety, depression, these also play a big factor on how well a relationship will do. Because if there's a person, if you see how they act when things don't go their way, I'm telling you, this will be a much larger predictor if you're going to last with them. Because once again, a lot of times people get caught up in the infatuation stage, that butterflies in your stomach. That's really just a little bit of anxiousness. And there's nothing wrong with that, because it's telling your brain to your body that, hey, I'm feeling something here. But once again, feelings are fleeting. Emotions come and go. But that personality trait, remember, is constant. So does it mean they can't always be that? Maybe, maybe not. But more than likely, they're not if that's not their typical behavior. So see them when things don't go their way. This is going to give you a much better picture of, is this the person I want to be with long term? Because if they're typically the naysayer, oh, I don't think you can do that, or this is not going to work out, and that's always them, that's probably going to come back around more and more as the relationship gets stronger and gets deeper. And it might be harder to break away because you felt a bond and connection with them for other reasons, whether it be physical or they're just nice people. But there are certain things that may come back to bother you, and you don't want to have that to be the ending factor. So it's not to say, once again, it should be the end all be all, but understand it to a degree where, you know, is this the person that's going to work for me? If they're always the negative Nancy, the Debbie Downer, or if they're always on the other side of the spectrum, always a happy-go-lucky, overly optimistic, even sometimes naive to situations, it needs to be a fair mix. It's going back to that balance on that spectrum so you can have the best possible, keyword, possible relationship. Now, before we wrap this all up, think about this as well. Now, once again, how do I change this? I said earlier, is personality changeable? Not really, but it's constant through life. But like I said, the behaviors can be shifted to your ability, because as adults, especially if you're watching, you're probably an adult, you learn how to deal with certain things. If you're introverted, you've learned how to talk to people. It just may not be your forte. Or if you're kind of a disagreeable person who butts heads a lot, doesn't mean you can't cooperate. It's just that you might be the one in the group that causes a stir. But what do you do to fix it? So think about this. Put yourself in scenarios where that opposite trait needs to be emphasized. Let's use introversion, extroversion, for example. If you know you're the person that's not going to speak up in the group, be the leader, take charge, do things and activities, whether it's fun ones, like say karaoke, where you're going to have to be in front of people in a social setting and be on the forefront, or do group activities or team leagues or something that's going to put you around a bunch of people, ease into it, but do that more and more. So not necessarily you say you'll always be perfect at it, but guess what? You'll get better, because just like any skill, the more you do it, the better you'll get. So you have to think about this when it comes to your personality traits. So make sure you do it like that. Now, something else like neuroticism, if you're a high worrier, highly neurotic, doesn't mean you will never worry again, but start exploring why you're worrying. Is it going to fail because I simply don't think it'll work? Or is it going to fail because I did something wrong? Or the outcome outweighs the reward, the risk is way bigger. If it is, then that makes sense. And sometimes you have to be a little worrisome. But if you catch yourself worrying more and more about things that don't matter, then that's where the real issue will come. So think about that. Now, other traits, you can take the same factor. So make sure when it comes to personality that you're not only looking at it as an end-all be-all, because a lot of people talk about this is just the way I am. Okay, I'm fine with that. But guess what? We're humans and our brain is adaptive and we can change our behaviors. It may take a little more effort. Keyword, it may take a little more effort. But all in all, you can get there. So take that in consideration next time when you think about personality traits. So thanks as always for tuning in, guys. Hope you enjoyed this episode. I might do some more in-depth ones because personality is a subject I talk about a lot and has a lot of implications on how we perform, like you see in everyday life and whatever your endeavors are. So make sure you like, comment, and share. And tune in next time. And thanks as always, get your mind right.